Welcome to Serve and Volley, the tennis podcast for people who like arguments. I'm Nick.
I'm Pavel.
So, welcome back to Serve and Volley. It's been a few weeks. Pavel, have you had a nice time?
Lovely time, yeah. We just wanted to, you know, always leave them wanting more. It's the first rule of show business, so that's what we're doing for our fans.
Yeah, and one of the great things about that is that I don't remember anything that's happened. So the first big tournament after our last episode was Miami. Pavel, run me through what happened there.
Very quick overview. Federer kind of cruised to the final, beat Isner.
Is that 101?
It is his number 101, yes. He beat Shapovalov in the semis, and Isner beat Felix Auger-Aliassime, who I name-dropped in an episode at some point in the semis.
So, a few months ago.
I also belatedly like to take some credit for, you know, we made that Kyrgios episode, and then he won Acapulco. So, you know, maybe the way to monetize this podcast is a player should pay us to mention them,
or
and then suddenly their results, like, really take off.
Yeah, or we should, like, really gas someone up and then put a huge amount of money on them to, like, win their next tournament.
Yeah, or that.
So we'll be doing that in our next segment, Backhanded Compliments. But first of all, so Miami, it's almost too long ago for us to dwell on it. We then had...
Well, Miami is just next gen did well, but ultimately the old guys were in the final, the ultimate old guy won. And it was a decent tournament, nothing spectacular. On the women's side, Ashley Barty won, which was quite nice because she's a very likable player.
Yeah,
we might discuss her in Backhanded Compliments next time.
I think she's interesting, and she's also the only person currently who's in the top 10 for both singles and doubles. She's an interesting person from that perspective. Just to go back onto the men's side, it wasn't just the ultimate old guy winning, it was the ultimate person who typifies everything that's wrong with the men's game, who he beat in the final, John Isner. So, yes, I think the next gen did well, but really there's no change. Then on to, is it Monte Carlo? Was there a big tournament between the two? I mean, obviously there were.
No, there was some Davis Cup, right? Or some Fed Cup. This is kind of the transition between the American hard court season and the clay court. So I think
we'll
Monte Carlo.
We'll talk about the Fed Cup in a
second. I think Monte Carlo is, I think there was a bit of, you know, a couple of weeks, not hiatus, but kind of a lull. So it's actually okay that we didn't make an episode.
Yeah, it's good for us. Good for us. Yeah. Well done.
So Monte Carlo just finished. Not a combined gender tournament, only on the men's side. So Fonini beat Lajovic in the final, as I predicted.
Yeah, exactly. The final that everyone was bigging up.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because at some point all the big seeds kept dropping. And it just seemed like Djokovic and Nadal was the inevitable final. But then, you know, they didn't take advantage. Nadal was quite poor against Fonini. But to be fair to Fonini, he also played really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously one of those players who can just bring it, you know, a certain point. You don't expect him to do Nadal, what was it, 6-2, 6-3 on the clay?
6-4, 6-2, I think. He could have bageled him in the second set before Nadal saved three match points. So it could have been even more dramatic.
I mean, it was still extraordinary performance. Djokovic, again, he's been having a bit of a tough time since the Australian Open. That's his first quarterfinal out of his last three tournaments. I mean, he's fallen quite early in these. But, you know, as we've discussed before, sometimes it's quite hard to get yourself up when after the adrenaline of winning a major or getting quite deep in a major. You sort of expect Djokovic to do a little bit better, but in a way I feel like he's focused now on, you know, trying to catch Nadal and Federer in the majors prize, and maybe doesn't care so much about, you know, Monte Carlo is a nice place to go for a week, but, you know, he doesn't need that title.
Doesn't he live there?
I think it is his technically his residence.
Yeah, I think it's...
his home tournament.
Clearly, apart from Federer, the big guys haven't done that well at Masters this year. And you can either build a narrative about, you know, they don't care, or, you know, maybe it just comes down to how they play on the day. And Nadal didn't play particularly well. Fonini blasted him off the court. Fonini, I think, is also the only person to beat Nadal from two sets down at a major. He did at the US Open a few years ago. So clearly it's a bit of an uncomfortable matchup for Nadal, as if Nadal can have an uncomfortable matchup on clay. I think Fonini is one of those players where you know, kind of know that he can do it if his head is in the game. Djokovic, yeah, I mean, quite a few players that did well at the Australian Open are doing badly this year. Puy has barely won a match. Tiafoe lost again today, you know, kind of a bit indifferent. Tsitsipas, you know, got to the final in Dubai, but also has been losing quite a lot. So, yeah, it's just hard to take that momentum through. And we'll see what the next two clay court tournaments will bring. I think what's really shocking is that Djokovic lost to Medvedev, because Medvedev naturally would not have had a game that suited to clay, you would think. He plays with not much topspin. He hits the ball quite flat. and, you know, he's never really had previous success on clay before. And he really should have gotten to the final because he was 5-1 up in the first set against Lajovic in the semis. And then just kind of the wheels came off. And to be fair, Lajovic played very well, but Medvedev just looked a bit gassed. So, yeah, combination of, you know, Novak not playing that well, Rafa not playing that well. Bit of a weird tournament, but I'm pretty happy for Fognini.
Yeah, we'll talk about him a little bit in the court and controversy section. Yeah. And also nice to have another Serb on the block. Finally, just in this first section, the baseline, the Fed Cup. We had the Fed Cup this weekend.
For you must be excited.
You know what? If I'd been in London, I would have probably tried to go get tickets to go see that.
Near your spiritual home?
Yeah, at the Copper Box in the Olympic Park, which I've never seen anything performed there. Can't imagine it's a great venue. But GB beating Kazakhstan and returning to the World Group for the first time, I don't know since when. But
Early 90s?
Yeah, I mean, basically the first time in my lifetime. I mean, Johanna Konta, as we should call her, is an interesting figure in that her singles performance outside of the Fed Cup has been pretty poor for the last couple of years, ever since that Wimbledon semi. But her record in the Fed Cup is extraordinary. I think that's 11 straight singles victories.
There's a few players like that who really turn up for the country, which, do you think in Konta's case, it's kind of a desire to prove the haters wrong? Because did she get some kind of backlash from Australia for...
I have no idea about that. I mean, she's obviously someone who has like a sort of triple nationality, and being Hungarian immigrants to Australia turned British quite early on in her childhood. So she's, yeah, I don't know whether it's that specifically, you know, I don't know if Kyle Edmund is really going out there trying to prove he's not South African. Yeah, I mean, Kazakhstan on paper, not the hardest team in the world. They got Putintseva, who's, you know, the highest ranked singles player there. I think it's ranked higher than Joe Konta. So, but other than that, I mean, I think GB should have been in control and were in control.
Well, it's quite dramatic, right? Were all the matches three setters?
I think they were all three setters.
Yeah, it would have been fun to go because there would have been quite a lot of drama. And
Katie Bolter almost beat Putintseva in the first set of singles matches. I think she lost. I think she had 3 match points. Mm. I love reading about that from the perspective, a British perspective, being like, oh, agony and, you know, defeat. Whereas, you know, thinking about how many times people have saved match points and gone on to win, and then you're and then it's the whole kind of the whole different narrative spin. So yeah, I think it's good.
You should be reading more Kazakh tennis media, I think.
I should, yeah. If only I was getting the Kazakh newspapers delivered. Yeah, it's good for British tennis that the women are back in the world group, and we'll see. I mean, the Fed Cup, I don't think, is a super exciting tournament, but it is retaining its format for the time being, as opposed to the Davis Cup, so we get home.
And you still get big names. I mean, Halep has been playing for Romania pretty consistently, right?
So, yeah.
Kvitova played for the Czech
Republic. I gather in non-British Fed Cup news there was some very interesting stuff going on that I don't really know anything about. I think it was France-Romania, was it?
Yeah, I think France won, and it was also quite...
I think it was apparently a very good fixture.
Yeah.
That's really all I can say on it, because, you know, my eyes were somewhat off the ball.
Well, you know, we'll make a serve and volley season in France at some point, but...
Just after our Kazakh season.
Exactly, yeah.
Over to backhanded compliments.
This week we'll be discussing everyone's favorite next-gen star, or not, Sasha Zverev.
Yes. Well, go on. You, Pavel, come on, big him up, because you've been talking Zverev up for years and years, and I've been unconvinced.
I mean...
And you've been constantly telling me that you've been proved right, because he's won some sort of minor carpet 250. So go on.
There have been no tournaments on the ATP Tour on carpet since 2004. I randomly guessed that number. Well, Sasha is, a Russian holding a German passport, born in April in the 90s. So, you know, we're basically twins. And my brother's also called Sasha. So
you think of him as a Russian?
He...
Does he speak German with a Russian accent?
No, but he speaks Russian to his box, which makes sense because his dad is still his coach. So, no, he's definitely a German. You know, I'm not going to...
You know, an empiricist about these things.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, he also speaks... You know, very fluent English. So he speaks the same 3 languages I speak. So, you know,
very good.
Yeah. As for his tennis,
better or worse than you?
I would say better, but you know, just about.
He would probably choke trying to close you out for a bagel. I think you might get in there.
Yeah, I think if he was going for a golden set, I would sneak a point just because he would
double fault on match point. Probably.
Exactly. Yeah. Classic. As we're discussing this, he has had another big choke, and you know. Lost when everyone expected him to win. He was playing Nicolas Jarry, who's ranked in the 70s, I want to say. You know, decent player, tall guy, big serve. being Chilean, he's probably quite comfortable on clay, but you know, this is the kind of matchup that Zverev should be, you know, winning all day long. He had a match point, then he was up 3-0 with two mini breaks and a tie break, and then proceeded to unleash a series of unforced errors. To be fair to Jarry, he also played well. He came to the net a lot called the end of that match, which I thought was quite interesting because, you know, it's clay. But I think this just ties in into Zverev's general performance in 2019. I mean, he got to the final in Acapulco, but apart from that, he lost to Kohlschreiber in Australian Open. He lost to Munar in Monte Carlo. I mean, he's had some pretty, you know, nondescript defeats. It's not like he's been... He just won the Masters.
Yeah, this is his finals. Year. 2019 is his year. We saw him at the World Tour Finals beating Djokovic to the...
Yeah, well, we saw him beat Federer and then he beat Djokovic.
We physically saw him beat Federer and then we, via our TV, saw him beat Djokovic. You know, that was sort of seen as a turning point. It was perceived as a turning point because the criticism against him had been like, he's got all the physical attributes, but there's lacking a little bit of the mental steel. And the Tour Finals are a tournament that sort of reward a wee bit of mental fortitude because, you know, you have to do this round robin to get through that and then it's a sort of knockout. So, you know, it's a format that you'd think is a sort of like blast furnace for getting people to be a little bit more resilient. But he's come out of the back of that and been pretty trash.
Well, I mean, Dimitrov did the same, right? Where he won the Tour Finals at the end of 2017 and since then has been kind of progressively deteriorating.
Yeah, but
there's
Dimitrov
been some injury
won the
trouble.
Tour Finals, I sort of think, by sort of default, in sort of the cards fell for him. Who did he play in the final?
Goffin.
Yeah, and didn't he play Jack Sock in the semis? So, I mean, it was a very different kettle of fish. I mean, Zverev won the Tour Finals on merit. I mean, I know he lost to Djokovic in the round robin and then beat him in the final. But, he, you know, to beat Federer and Djokovic back-to-back, you know, you deserve to win any tournament doing that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a fantastic tournament from him. He beat Isner in the group stages when Isner was playing pretty well as well. And there was this kind of suspicion that he's had this massive success winning three titles, reaching a few more finals, winning the Tour Finals, which are kind of some people consider part of the, like, the Masters circuit, being the top three set tournaments. But he hasn't been able to translate it to five setters, reaching only one quarterfinal. But now it seems that this year, it's not just five setters he's struggling with. He's struggling with three setters as well. He's lost three deciding set tiebreaks, hasn't won a single one. There's clearly something missing again. Maybe it's a coaching issue.
How old is he now? Because I keep saying he's like 24 and he's actually like 22 or something.
Yeah, he just turned 22 like a few days ago.
Okay.
So I think for his age, at Masters level, he's accomplished a hell of a lot. At Majors level, he's accomplished quite little because we've had people like Tsitsipas and John Chung reaching, you know, going further in tournaments than he has.
Here's a question for you, Pavel, as Serve and Volley's resident tennis archivist. What really successful players, and I'm talking about people who've won 8+, 10+ Grand Slams, had not achieved any sort of Grand Slam success by the age of 22? Like, is that a common path to sort of take, you know, probably 4 years out of your professional career before? Or is it like most of the ones that spring to mind, I can sort of picture them aged 18, 19, bursting into the Grand Slam arena?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very strict definition, you have to say, saying that, you know, to be a really successful player, you have to win 10 plus slams. I mean, there's only probably like 5 to 10 people who've done that. So
yeah, I said 8+.
Okay, even 8+.
But I'm saying that there's obviously like a difference in terms of like Wawrinka versus Djokovic, right? There's like one is like a really successful player, one is a successful player, right? I mean, yeah. that's the sort of distinction I'm making. Of the players who are like were like defining players within their generation, were most of them winning, challenging for competing for Grand Slams, if not winning them at younger age than Zverev now is?
Yeah, certainly if we look at the big four, obviously Murray didn't win his first one until he was like 25, but that was because he was up against three of the best players of all time. And he reached his first final when he was, I think, 21. So obviously went a lot further than Zverev has. And the other three, I mean, especially Rafa was already winning majors in his teens. Djokovic, I think, won his first major at 20 and Federer at 21. But if we go to Agassi, for instance, you know, he's had his ups and downs and you can definitely, I think, count him as one of the really successful.
Yeah, certainly players of that generation.
But he also had more longevity than anyone else from that generation.
So when did Agassi win his... How old was he when he won his first?
He would have been about 22, but then he had a few years when he didn't win any. So It was kind of seen as a blip. And then he started accumulating, you know, one or two majors here and there. And then he ended up with 8, I think, in the end.
And Sampras?
Oh, Sampras won his first one at 19, I think, or 20.
So the thing is, I think feel like we're staring down the barrel of Zverev ending up being a late bloomer, sort of regardless. I mean, and he's also, it's also, the difficulty is that we know that that this current generation are going to move out of the way at some point. He's running the risk of younger players coming in. And
yeah, like being, Felix Auger-Aliassime.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously going to be there and thereabouts. He is obvious. I think it is obvious that he's going to win Grand Slams, probably.
I think he's probably going to be number one at some point as well.
Yeah, being number one, I think he's going to be like a bit of a crapshoot once Federer, you've already seen Federer take his foot off the gas a little bit with how many tournaments he competes in, although he's been playing quite a lot lately. But I think you'll see him and Nadal particularly preserving themselves more and more. So who's number one? I don't think it's going to be a huge testament. Agassi, first Grand Slam was Wimbledon in 92.
How old was he?
He was born in April 1970.
So he was 22.
22. You were spot on.
Yeah.
So there's a lot you like about Zverev's game. Talk us through the good things. We've been negative about him.
He has a beautiful two-handed backhand, and it's quite rare for someone that tall to have a good two-handed backhand, or any backhand. I mean, usually you associate tall players with good forehands and good serves. He has both of those things. Yeah, I think the backhand is the most notable part of his game. You know, good all-round player, can be aggressive, can be defensive.
He's a smart guy as well. I sent you that video of him guessing players by their grunts, and he was extraordinarily good. He's like a grunt savant.
But is that an indication of intelligence? Probably not.
Yeah, you know your opponents. He obviously does his research. You know, as you say, he speaks three languages very well. He's a veritable Pavlovitz. Yeah, I think we're both... Look, I've always been more skeptical about Zverev. I think he's a bottler. I'm not sure he's like that good. I think he would be not a standout player, except that his generation has been so bad. But at the same time, I do think he's been playing really well. I thought he was brilliant at the Tour Finals. At the Tour Finals, I was really convinced that he was going to kick on this year. I thought he's going to win the Aussie. And he hasn't. I mean, but again, it's a mental thing. We said many of the same criticisms about Kyrgios a couple of weeks ago, and he then went and won Acapulco. Now, Nick Kyrgios is someone who has a lot worse psychological problems in the game than
probably
Zverev.
More talent as well.
You think Kyrgios has more talent than Zverev?
I think so.
Oof. I think Kyrgios has better trick shots, but the actual like raw
he has more weapons than Zverev. Zverev is
yeah,
just,
but it's a bit like saying like Benoit Paire is better than Nadal. I mean, like anyway,
discuss.
Maybe we'll in the next segment we'll be discussing more of this. So
yeah,
we'll leave Zverev for now. I mean, he's someone I'd like to revisit in later episodes of.
I'm going to make a prediction and to say that he will make the second week of at least one major,
that
possibly two this year.
That is such a pathetic bedwetting prediction. Of course, okay. He's the world number, what, three currently?
But in the race, he's like 70.
I'm going to make a prediction here. He wins either Wimbledon or the US Open this year.
He's not going to win Wimbledon. He's not a grass court player.
I don't think it matters.
Okay.
I honestly think it just... The drawing
I think semis are the French Open or US Open. I'll be a bit bolder than my first sentence.
But semis are the French, so you're going to be proven wrong by the next episode, probably.
We're still like a month away until the semis of the French.
All right. By the next but one episode. Time for...
Courting Controversies.
So on this week's Courting Controversies, we're talking about really what is our favourite thing to talk about, I guess. Which players have completely wasted their talent? Who's the biggest wasted talent on the men's and the women's tour? We talk about this in all sorts of senses because we've just been talking about Zverev. We talked about Kyrgios a few weeks ago. I think we are people who are sympathetic to squandered, profligate, wasteful freaks.
Yeah. I mean, it's always an interesting narrative because the opposite of narrative is also quite nice when someone just plugs away and, you know, breaks through the way
they
like.
Ferrer, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, Ferrer was always kind of up there, but, you know, the Radu Albots or the Dusan Lajovic is the kind of, you know, guys who aren't particularly, you know...
Davidenko.
Yeah, I guess. I think
these
kind of like hustlers who can, you know, grind their way through points because they, you know, love the game and they want to succeed rather than...
You're talking about the people who are who simply there and thereabouts on the tour for long enough that they have a really like good patch where suddenly it's like, oh, you look, they're actually winning things.
Yeah.
And then I'm talking about with Ferrer and Davidenko, the people who are just like, oh, just like consistently good and obviously work hard and make the most of their talents. Who are the people who have made the least of their talents?
Yeah. So I think Bouchard is probably a good answer on the women's side.
We said before in our prep for this episode, and believe it or not, we do prep, we said we were not going to talk about people who were in their sort of early 20s, mid-20s. We said late 20s and early
30s. 25, or about to turn 25. And on the women's tour, we don't see the same longevity as we see on the men's. So, I mean, she might still do it.
It seems harsh on Bouchard because she is still relatively young. But it has been a spectacular tail off since that Wimbledon final.
Yeah.
And just, like, weird shit as well. Like, the the locker room injury at the US Open, the lawsuit against USTA, and then all, I guess, like the accusations that she's more interested in other things than tennis.
Well, that's a common accusation for, you know, Kyrgios as well.
Yeah, or... I'd rather be playing basketball or Fortnite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something you can empathize with, at least at Fortnite.
So. I can certainly sympathize with Fortnite. Our Fortnite podcast will be coming soon.
So I guess we should be talking about people in their late 20s, early 30s.
Or
people who are retired, I mean.
Yeah. We sort of mentioned this in the context of Fornini earlier, which seems a bit harsh to do it the week that he wins the Masters 1000 title.
Well, this was his first ever Masters final. I don't think he's ever made the semis of a major. So there's still a sense, if anything, this week has kind of proven that he could have done a lot more with his career. I mean, he's about to turn 32. I don't think he has that many big tournaments left in him.
Do you think that he lacks the hunger because he's so immensely wealthy?
I was actually going to mention Gulbis as another big wasted talent. So yeah, maybe there's something to that. Although Kyrgios is not from a particularly privileged background, so... I mean,
well, it's obviously not an infallible rule, but like Fornini and Gulbis, who are the two tennis players on the tour who are most like dripping in ancestral wealth, are both sort of people with a lot more weapons than their record would have you believe.
Yeah,
Benoit, is he? I could believe he was wealthy.
Well,
he looks rich.
Well, Pere just has a terrible, terrible forehand. I don't think Pere is actually a good example of. He has some really big weapons, but he also has some glaring deficiencies in his game. In the way that, for instance, Gulbis. Well, Gulbis also has a weird forehand, but you see him bring that all together and, you know, make the French Open semis, or you see Fornini beat Nadal from two sets down. You rarely see Pere do anything particularly amazing over the course of a match or a tournament. You see him do amazing things within a game or within a set, maybe.
Mm.
But, you know, he's just not a complete player. So I actually think it would be quite harsh on Pere too. You should, you know, whoever coached him to play his forehand like that at the age of 8 probably should be
What other players are we thinking?
Well, Gasquet. Actually, quite a few French guys. I mean,
Gasquet.
I think Monfils probably could have won more, given his level of talent.
I'm not sure with Monfils. Like, I'm not sure that... I think Monfils has had a pretty good career for what you'd expect. Gasquet, I think, you know, felt like there was... He was part of that generation. They included, like, Murray and Djokovic and Nadal. And he's the one who sort of didn't go anywhere.
But as a teenager, he was, I think... seen as possibly the most talented one.
Yeah.
Even.
But that's true, I guess, across the board. You look at the people who won junior majors and, you know, it's a real crapshoot in terms of the mix of people who are, like, gone on to be really big and then people who are, you know, I struggle to find their own their Wikipedia pages. I mean, and it's interesting, like, it seems something British tennis and American tennis do very well at juniors because they give so much support for their players at that age, allow them to travel the world entering these tournaments and, you know, go through. So there's a slightly evening out that comes when they enter the adult game because funding is less of a big thing. I'm trying to think of other players, including people who've retired. I'm thinking Robin Söderling as someone who, like, could have achieved a lot more in
he had Mona
game. Yeah, I know. I mean, like, I'm not saying he wasted his talent because he was...
So you think wasted talent can be both people who wasted themselves or people who it was kind of wasted for?
Yeah, look, Robin Söderling deserved better. He deserved, you know, to win some Grand Slams. And, you know, I think you could say the same about Del Potro. Del Potro probably deserved to win a few more Grand Slams in his career. I mean, those are probably at the big ends. I mean, on the women's game, I think someone like Anna Ivanovic, you sort of thought... That's more of like a wasted it herself. I think you could make some of the same criticisms made about Bouchard, about Ivanovic. You know, when she became world number one, won the French, she sort of thought, she's actually a really good player. Jelena Jankovic too, those sort of...
She never won a major, right, Jelena Jankovic?
She certainly won doubles majors.
Did she?
Yeah, she won with Jamie Murray at Wimbledon once upon a time. Yeah, there was a time when those Serbian women seemed like they were taking over the world, and that sort of never went anywhere. I think there are other kind of ones in the Kyrgios mold. I think Tomic...
I think Dimitrov van Sok... both have good claims to that. I mean,
I just don't rate Dimitrov that highly. I mean, he's just like a bang average player to me.
Nah, he's got every shot in the book. Again, their career is not over yet. Sok, I think, is probably the best doubles player in the world, even though, because the Bryans are playing worse than Bryan and Sok were playing at the kind of the tail end of last year. Singles, it's kind of surprising that he has achieved as much as he has.
He's transitioned well. I never rated him as a singles player.
Well, he's just lazy. I mean, he has an amazing forehand. He has a good serve. He's great at the net.
I just think the amazing forehands are sort of dime a dozen now. I mean, like, you don't rate Carl Edmund.
But... No, but Jack Sock has, like, more topspin in his forehand than Nadal. Like, he has a really, I think, unusual weapon in that. Carl Edmund has a good forehand, but that is, I think, a dime a dozen forehand. I mean, you look at the American juniors and, like, they all have that.
I would also bang in, just for the, just in the sort of Gasquet stakes, Dan Evans as being, like, someone who was on the cusp of, like, I think probably breaking into the top. I think he would have got towards the top 20 when he got his ban for...
Really? He was in the 40s somewhere, right?
I think he was 38 in the world. But he was playing really well, and, you know, he's someone who has bags of talent. It's just...
He might still do it this year.
A bit lazy, and...
What's happened to him since he made that final?
Yeah, he's just... I think he's just kept plugging away, picking up points. He's now ranked, like, 86 in the world, which got him automatic entry to the French. So, yeah, it's going sort of the right direction for Dan Evans. What about... Which women do you think? Do you think it's different? Do you think there are fewer? Or do you think we're just being sexist?
No, I think, well, with women, there's less case of, like, sustained dominance. So someone will come, kind of rise to, you know, the top. Like, I don't know, like, you've got your Marion Bartoli, who, like, wins a major and then retires immediately. That doesn't happen that much.
Unretired and then retired again.
That doesn't... I mean, Hingis, I guess, is a huge what-if. Monica Seles is a huge what-if. What about... Even though they both won quite a lot of majors, they both had, you know, problems in Hingis' case, injuries, and Seles' case being stabbed by a mad Steffi Graf fan. You know, that...
Yeah.
She could have been, you know... she's already won the all-time greats, but she could have been, you know, she could have matched Steffi Graf.
What about Dinara Safina?
Oh, I think Murat is a good answer to this. I think having won two majors... But if you just look at his game, I mean, he was absolutely massive. Just massive backhand, massive forehand, great serve. I think if he could have been, you know, competing in the Big Four era if he wasn't in the head case.
Most of the men that we're talking about are, like, fit into quite a specific mold, which is, like,
bratty,
you know, bad temperament, bad, you know, people, almost all of these people are people who have, like, psychological problems that are very, like, transparent. No one looks at Safin's career, looks at Safin's playing and interviews, and is like, I wonder what went wrong with him. And the same, you could sort of say the same about Kyrgios. You can say the same about Fognini, Gulbis. I mean, like, these people are like brats. Is that the big obstacle to being a successful men's tennis star? Being too big a brat?
I think, like, in tennis, because it's an individual sport, and, like, you know, most other beloved sports, there's this more of this tendency to see players losing as something they've done to themselves, which may or may not be true. So if we rule out the people who, you know, were injury plagued, like, well, Söderling was a bit of a brat, but again, he got mono. That's nothing to do with his personality. Del Potro is the opposite of a brat. I think Del Potro is, you know, one of the most likable players on tour. Dimitrov is not that much of a brat. I think, you know, there's a few that we've discussed that don't quite fit the mold, but there's definitely a sense that if you're really talented from an early age, that probably does, you know, fuck you up a bit.
Spoken like someone who knows all about that.
Yeah.
Well, that's all for this week. We'll be back again.
Yeah, Nick is very hoarse now.
I've just taken... It was just so invigorating, that discussion.
So what is your answer if you had to name one player?
I think Kyrgios still.
I think Roger Federer. Just, I mean...
Federer would have achieved so much more. No, I think Kyrgios is the person who I'm like... But he's still young enough that, yeah, you know, if I'm getting on my high horse about Bouchard, I should be getting on my high horse about Kyrgios. But he's the player who it seems most transparent. I think
Tomic is probably a better answer, because he's not quite as talented as Kyrgios, but he's 3 years older. So in his case, yeah. I think we can...
And he's, like, really shagged it. I mean, like, his behaviour has been so consistently terrible. He's building something back up a little bit, but just, yeah.
On that note.
If only he had Bernard's watch. On that note, which will make sense to no one who didn't watch 90s British children's TV, we'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, looking forward to it.